Good afternoon, gardeners. Welcome to Garden Planet. You're with Selena.
And Karen. Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
And boys and girls.
Yes. Today, the agenda, we are going to talk about autumn gardening, and we are going to be talking about slugs and snails, and also Karen's favourite herb of the week. So, to bring us in, we're going to talk about things that boys are made of.
What are little boys made of? What are little boys made of? Frogs and snails and puppy dog tails, that's what little boys are made of.
Okay, so as you could hear, little boys are made of snails, although the version of the song that Selena and I know of, they're also made of slugs. So, slugs. Obviously a different version, slugs, but that's fine. Frogs are just as slimy. They'll do.
Yeah.
So, slugs and snails, let's start with that. They are, I learnt a new word this week, Selena, gastropod. They are a type of gastropod species. Have you heard of that word?
Yes, but I've heard they're a type of mollusk.
Oh, yes. I think that's the species in the family.
Okay.
And gastro meaning stomach and pod meaning 1 foot underneath.
Oh, like a stomach foot.
Yeah, so it's like a stomach on a foot.
Oh.
Yum! But that's all right because stomachs are, you know, highly useful as are feet. So what more do you need? Just a few delicious tender sprouts in Selena's garden and you're good to go. I've done a little bit of research, but I, of course, from my experience, any gardener is very familiar with the gastropod. So Selena and I are going to come up with some ways to help our listeners stop these things eating all our wonderful produce and flowers. Did you find anything of use in your studies?
There are so many things that we can fight the battle with.
Yeah. And you'll know with it being autumn now, the battle has somewhat doubled.
Yes, because slugs and snails love damp conditions.
Yeah.
And it is getting wetter.
Yeah.
And they do come out at night and the nights are getting longer.
Ah.
So, be vigilant with your crops or anything that you're growing that you want to eat that you don't want eaten by the slugs and snails army.
Yes, because they are generalists as feeders. They'll eat almost any tender growth on food crops, ornamentals, trees or shrubs. But they are particularly fond of seedlings and young plants. So there's nothing worse when you put down your new crop. It's so exciting. You've been to Mitre 10, you've got all the seedlings, and then those slimy gastropods got it a night.
Yep.
Like they,
you come the next morning. Where are all my seedlings I planted?
And they will. They devour. So what have you found to be a good deterrent, Selena?
Okay, so some suggestions in my research was surround your area with a copper wire
Yes,
or something.
Yes, I found that in my research. I haven't done that yet.
Apparently the copper, if it's a shiny, smooth surface, the slugs and snails can't get past that barrier.
Yeah.
But I'm not really sure how practical that is in terms of crops, whether you put a big band of copper.
Copper is very expensive.
Yeah,
it's one of the more expensive. But interestingly, did you know, apart from it being what it is that actually kills the slugs and snails when they go into the copper?
No.
Get this. They get a slight electrical shock when they come into contact with it, and that causes them to retreat.
Okay, that's
how about that?
Good to know.
Hey?
Like a mini electric fence.
I'm
wondering how big this copper has to be. Is it like a wire?
I discovered that, if you can get it as a mesh or a foil, that would be ideal. And they suggest a band of at least 3 inches. So maybe if you had pots, you could maybe around the edge of the pot at the top, sort of fold it around that maybe.
Oh, right.
Would be a suggestion.
So it's not like foil that you can buy at the supermarket.
I wouldn't have a clue. I've never purchased copper.
Because I haven't seen it in the shops, in the garden centres where it's like, oh, yeah. fibers to stop your slugs and snails.
I'm sure if you did a bit of research and we're keen, but I've never had surplus cash in my hands to afford copper. So what would be a more, say, cost-effective way?
How about, some people said use salt because salt can kill the slugs and snails, but
yes.
that might kill your seedlings as well.
Yeah. And I've used salt before just when I've caught them in the ash, like I might see them, you know, heading towards the plants, and then I'll just take a teaspoon of salt and just douse the whole slug.
Mm.
And it's not pretty.
Do they just
I suggest to walk away if you're squeamish. They have you have, you're not like me, you're not sinister and won't stay and watch, but they literally froth to death.
Oh no.
Yeah, it's hideous. Your plants are safe.
Okay. And, what if you used sand? Because sand has a bit of salt content. Maybe the grittiness of it that
could work.
They don't like going over it.
But yeah, they don't like any sort of difficult gritty surface. So people have used things like eggshells or seashells ground up.
Okay, but apparently eggshells aren't very effective. Some people,
I haven't had great luck with eggshells myself. I generally, from my experience, I'm kind of like a path of least resistance gardener. I'm a bit like the slug, actually. Yeah.
Are you on their side, Karen?
New favourite species. And I slug pallet it all the way. Easy, cheap.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the thing is, not all slug pellets are the same, though.
That is correct.
Because they are pelleted with a poison.
Yeah. So there's the Quash brand, which is an organic. Is that iron phosphate? I'm not sure what.
Iron phosphate.
Is that what's inside that one, eh?
Apparently that's not so damaging to any birds that might want to eat this dead snails and slugs.
Yeah.
Because, and then that brings me to another point. What about attracting birds into your garden with your trees and shrubs? And letting them eat your slugs and snails.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've got chickens in my garden. Yeah, literally in it.
And do they?
And I'm thinking, great, they can eat all the pests. And they like snails. They'll give a snail a good go. But slugs, they'll sniff it. Well, chickens probably. Yeah, they sniff. They've got nostrils. They'll peck it. But they're not a fan of the slug for some reason. So that's with chickens. I'm not so sure about that. They prefer the smaller sort of.
All right.
That's just my experience.
Okay.
With that one.
Other animals that will eat slugs and or snails. I've come across ducks.
Oh.
Ducks are very, they love slugs and snails.
So all you need to do is just maybe incorporate a pond now into the backyard.
Yep.
A few ducks. Boom.
Also, hedgehogs, if you have a hedge and you might be have a habitat for a hedgehog to come and they might eat all your slugs and snails. So provide some accommodation for these animals that are predators.
Okay. The only thing is with hedgehogs, don't they eat plants as well or are they omnivores?
They eat animals or they're carnivorous. So they're not going to damage your plants.
Okay.
They'll just eat.
Interesting.
Although, having said that, ducks might make a mess of
things. There's always the other line of defence, which is natural plant deterrence.
Okay, you tell.
Did you find out anything about that one?
Natural plant deterrence.
Like rosemary, peppermint, thyme, garlic, plants like that. Don't enjoy.
Would you chop and drop those leaves?
And you can do that with them as well.
And just surround your ones that you want to protect with those leaves and then the slugs will maybe not.
Yeah. The slugs don't really care for the scent either, so they'll, as soon as they sniff, a bit of peppermint or thyme or rosemary scattered around there, they'll, U-turn it.
Maybe.
And go and find somewhere else.
Make up a garlic spray and just fumigate.
Yeah, or you could make, definitely make sprays if you can be bothered. do you use sprays much, Selena? Like make up your own?
No, I think I've only ever done a garlic and pyrethrum spray to battle white fly.
Yes, yes, that's right. But oh, yes, because I gave you that concentrate.
But I haven't used it for slugs and snails because I don't know.
I just find, with spray bottles and all that, they tend to get clogged up.
It's a bit of a hassle to do that.
They say it's easy to do, but, yeah, come on.
Another thing is because slugs and snails love damp conditions, maybe make it a bit drier with maybe mulch around your plant so that it's not inviting for your, the slugs and snails.
So that could bring us on to the tips for autumn gardening.
Yeah.
Selena.
Just one second, Karen.
I'm rushing you.
I had another thing.
Was this to do with the gastropods?
Yes, they love, because they like damp conditions, they'll go into like citrus peels and hide there. And it's kind of like a, not a bait, but a something they
and
it'll attract them away from...
I've heard of that. And the same with potato slices and apple slices are other things that they go for. And if you just leave it somewhere strategic and then go and basically farm them at some point during the evening, and if you continually do that, like maybe every night for a couple of weeks or every second night or something like that, you can start whittling down the...
the population and they won't reproduce
as much.
Cuts into their life cycle. Another thing that people seem to think is effective is bear traps.
Oh yeah, yeah, I've tried that.
No,
I think I'd rather just drink the bear.
I have not tried that, but that's what some people say.
Okay.
And with the slug pellets, if you want to be safe and you don't want anything else to be poisoned, maybe just put them in a trap or in the citrus. Just harvest citrus and just hide it in there. That, and also if the rain comes down, it won't sort of rain on your pellets and destroy them.
True.
And there's one more thing, Karen. There's so much more on this topic. I've heard because the slug pellets are made out of a bran, and apparently snails and slugs love eating that bran, and it'll attract them away. So even if you don't have poison in it, maybe get some bran.
Oh.
I've tried this, or rolled oats or something like that.
Have you tried it?
Yeah. And they'll go for that. So they'll be more attracted to that than they are to your plants.
Uh-huh.
And then once they're, like, eating their full, they're just lazy, and then you can go and...
Actually, that brings back a memory. With the chickens, I feed it chicken food, so the... every now and then I might just feed them the Pack and Save bran, which is basically just like wheat pellets. Mm-hmm. It's not ideal, but, on a budget, it's fine. So I've like thrown that out before for my chickens. And then, of course, the slugs at night come over for the leftovers.
Yeah.
And the next day I've actually, because it's not, they've had their fill, it's not ideal for their, their metabolism.
Mm.
And they die. I think they just explode or... obviously when your bran expands. Yeah, and I've just found by mere accident, trial and error, I didn't realise at the time. So why have I got slugs? And then I've seen that they've crawled from where the leftover chicken pellets were. And I put two into... so that actually, I can vouch for that.
It does work.
Yeah.
So there listeners, maybe get some of that oil bran.
Probably you can just get a $10 pack of chicken pellets
just
from Pack and
whatever
Save.
Whatever you can find that's branny.
Cheap as.
And
a sack of it.
Put it around and, all your...
And then it doesn't matter if the birds eat it as well.
No, because they won't be poisoned by the bran.
Yeah, I'd rather not put poison in the garden.
Nah. Hmm. And then one thing that I've been thinking about on this topic is... why don't we eat the slugs and snails?
Well, the French eat snails.
Exactly.
But like my chickens, as I mentioned earlier, slugs are, not
maybe
so much a favourite.
Slugs aren't as appetising, but certainly snails.
The poor slug. I'm sure God invented them for a reason.
Well, I've read that the slug, you might not want to eat it because it could cause meningitis or something nasty like that.
Yeah.
But snails are actually fine. What you do is boil them up, take the shell off, and then fry them up in some garlic butter.
Absolutely. With a bit of garlic.
So do your harvesting. I think there's no reason why.
Well, we'll be expecting some feedback on that, Selena, next week. So get cooking. Okay. Decollecting.
Oh, well, I see. I have some ringa-ringa lilies. Mm-hmm. And ringa-ringa lilies are apparently, well, I found they are the snail's favourite.
Oh.
Because when I was contracting gardening, we always had to bait the ringa-ringa lilies. That was
so
the one thing that they went for.
And I would assume you have those in your garden.
I have a few, not a great number, but that's what attracts the snails.
Oh, well, no excuses for your snail stew. Or not stew, stir fry. Yeah.
So maybe that's another idea. You could plant a lot of ringa lilies around your food crops, and the snails would go more for your ringas than your other things
worth
that you want
to look into.
So there's some ideas out there, listeners. So I wouldn't.
Great ideas. Fried snail. Great at this time of the year to give you plenty of energy for your autumn gardening.
Exactly.
Selena. Okay.
Okay.
So, where are we at with that? What are you up to at the moment in your garden regards autumn?
Autumn. Well, Karen, I went to a really good workshop the other week for composting.
Yeah.
And people might not be aware, but the Compost Collective do workshops all over Auckland. And if you go to their website, they might have one near you, which is free, and you can learn all about it. And autumn is just a great time to get your compost heap going and set it up so that it will break down.
Is the Compost Collective, is that like a charity type thing run by the council? Or?
It's sponsored by the council. It's all these composting gurus who go teach everyone how to compost at home or in their business.
Yep.
And they have workshops every couple of days.
Are they introducing it into schools as well, where they can teach the young minds how best to...
Schools, businesses, homes.
Oh, great. Okay. Interesting. And what did you learn at your workshop?
Oh, everything about composting. So how to build up your heap and what to put in it and what ratios to put in it.
Yeah. So what do you mean by ratios?
So there are two types of plant materials that you can put in your compost, and they're either greens or browns.
Mm-hmm.
And greens are like your grass clippings or seaweed, coffee grounds that are fresh because they've got moisture in them.
Yep.
And your browns are the things that are like cardboard and paper or straw or anything that's dried up.
Okay.
Fallen leaves, good at this time of year.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So they are, the browns are your carbon material.
Yes. And I've been told that carbon mean like pretty much anything that's like dead.
Yes.
Would I be right in saying that?
That's right.
Yeah.
And then your greens are your nitrogen material, the fresh stuff.
Because sometimes it causes a bit of confusion because some people say, you know, oh, you've got to make your compost like layered browns, greens. And there's even a ratio, 30 parts brown to one part green. So that's a ratio that I've been told.
Oh, okay. I was told...
what were you told?
70% carbon brown and 30% green.
Isn't that interesting?
So you want more of the dry material in ratio to your green material so that it can break down.
I think we're going to have a whole nother session on composting.
We'll need
it
to
can
invite Judy and let her.
Yeah, it can vary from gardener to gardener as well, the information like that. Because we got two very different findings there. So, but I guess the general rule of thumb, though, Selena, would you agree, is that you're wanting more carbon, less nitrogen, more dead, less alive.
Mm-hmm.
And FYI, coffee grounds are considered alive.
Yes, fresh.
Fresh coffee grounds, that is. Yeah, even though they're brown as brown, right? But they're fresh off the bean, which makes them alive.
Yeah.
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 Cool.
The reason for that is you don't want your compost being sludgy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You want it kind of rich and crumbly and holding air. You want air in it, so.
Very important. And some people would refer to that as hummusy.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a word I learnt today. I'm excited.
So as your compost breaks down, the microbes inside will, you know, make it more alive, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if it's aerated or hummusy, it's more likely to it provides better conditions for your soil microbes. That's the idea. Mm-hmm. And if it's more aerated, it can hold more moisture as well. It sounds weird, but more air, more moisture. But it's...
Yeah.
Yeah. But then it's not too much moisture.
Yes.
And because there's pockets, it can actually keep the moisture in rather than just have a pile of sludge in the bottom of your heap. Yeah. You want ideal conditions. It's a bit like your gut microbes.
Yeah.
You've got to get the conditions ideal for that to be optimal. Same with your compost.
One of the tips that I learned was at the bottom of your heap, make it full of your twigs and your kind of woody material just mm-hmm. to get that air in the bottom.
Which is great because we've got plenty of that around at this time of the year.
Yeah. So, and then, your autumn leaves, which are starting to fall now, are very good for bulking up that compost. So.
And what would you plant at this time of the year, Selena? What do you recommend?
Planting? Well, going into the winter season, you want to be preparing your winter veggies. So things like cabbages and peas and your brassicas, your collies and broad beans that like the cold. And for flowers, I've got time to think about sowing poppies and sweet peas.
All right.
And also, good time to plant bulbs for spring.
Yes. Give them, and it's a good time to plant at this time things like that because the soil is still warm enough from the summer before the winter, chills hit. And so, because it's still warm enough, it allows those bulbs that condition so that they can, is it germinate, the word?
Yes.
So that's quite right to get that soil temperature right for certain plants, like bulbs.
And because autumn things are dying down and they're setting seed and sometimes they will self-seed and they're just putting their seeds down to get ready to come up again in spring. So you're following the natural cycle of things.
That's right.
Yeah,
it's lovely, isn't it?
And another thing too, think about if you love roses, taking rose cuttings now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm not a huge fan of them, but I know some people love them.
Yeah. I love the rose. I do.
Are you a fan?
I do love the rose.
Yes.
But the growing of the rose can be a bit of a pain in the neck, but I take my hat off to those, dedicated rose gutters because it can be tricky sometimes.
They can be a bit finicky. In Auckland. Because of the humidity.
Oh, right, okay.
They tend to get a lot of black spot and fungal disease.
Yeah.
So you might want to just stick with the resistant varieties, the ones that are foolproof, like, say, Iceberg.
Yeah.
And maybe flower-covered roses, which take a lot of beating.
Okay.
Because they're the ones that they plant on roundabouts.
Ah.
So they're pretty tough.
All right.
Yeah.
Ah, thanks for that, Selena.
You're welcome.
I guess, was there anything else you wanted to mention about autumn?
I love this time of year. I've went to an autumn festival, the other weekend down at Foggy Dale Farm.
Oh, lovely. That was the one we were talking about. That's Hinoa?
Hinoa. So Linda Hallinan, she was the editor of the New Zealand Gardener. She's a journalist and has written about four different gardening books, a very big star in the gardening world.
Okay.
She opened up her farm on the weekend for people to come.
Yeah.
And was selling or got people to come and sell their jams and other crafty things to raise money for her community.
Oh, lovely.
And her garden is just amazing.
Yeah, I think it comes highly recommended.
I would recommend next time she opens the garden again, might be next year, you go and have a look.
Yeah.
It's just for readers of New Zealand Gardener magazine, she's obviously people know her. And she's taken lots of photos, so you'll see her garden in the magazine. But going there and seeing it in person, I'd say it's eye candy.
Wow.
I mean, she
sounds amazing.
All her flowers that are matching, like the colour coordination is amazing.
Matchy-matchy. Is it a big garden?
It's quite a big garden because it's in the Hanoas, it's on farmland.
So is it sort of in the foothills there of the ranges or...?
I'd say kind of in the valleys.
Okay.
But, just in amongst it.
Yeah.
Not right in the bush.
Yeah.
But, surrounding the
sounds like she'd get plenty of moisture there.
Yeah.
And pretty fair conditions, I'd say.
Fog, I guess. She's named it Foggy Dale.
Yeah. Lovely.
So she had, she's really into these dams and plums, and she's written a book about them.
Oh, is that a type of plum, is it?
Yeah, a type of plum.
Okay.
And she's got orchard and veggie
beds. Did she have any plums sort of or stewed plums or anything like that there?
She had things for sale. She had plants for sale.
And this damsel plum, that's her, what's the deal with that? Is it like a...
Damson plum.
Oh, damson.
It's a special kind of miniature plum.
Oh, okay. Is it like a red-fleshed plum or...?
Sort of a purpley colour.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to have to look that one up then.
And I'd say go have a look because you'll be quite surprised what she's done with her garden.
Like, is it purely ornamental?
I'd say it's a bit of both. She has veggies and flowers.
Okay.
It's a lot of flowers.
Yeah.
She's got a picking garden for flowers.
Yeah.
And everything's sort of very decorative and quite feminine, so...
Oh, nice. Yeah. And you know what? It's really important to have a mix of the two in any garden for pollination purposes. So often, you know, to get great veggies, you need great flowers as well.
Mm.
So I can only imagine how our veggies would look too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very ornamental and also practical.
Yeah. Awesome. Love it. Well, I'm going to go and check that one out sometime, Selena, for sure. Keep us posted when the next open day is.
Karen, what's your plant of the week?
Oh, yes. Almost forgot. Right. Can't let the listeners down. Been meaning to do this for the past 3 weeks. All right. My plant of the week is, of course, a herb. And it is the chive plant. I've always liked chives, but this particular season I have, for some reason, really enjoyed them. I think it's actually because I've been paying more attention to them. I've been giving them a lot more water.
Mm.
After doing our drought segment,
yes,
I realised, the reason why my chives aren't doing so well is probably I'm neglecting them. So I've started just tending to them a little more with just watering, and OMG, the results, beautiful lush chives.
Hooray.
Just pulling them out by the fistful.
Great.
It's beautiful. So easy. Easy care plant. Love it. That's my style. And the other thing that I really found interesting, which I didn't know, was that they actually also have some insect repelling properties. And they've got a really cute purple flower too, which is really nice too.
Like pom-poms.
Yeah, like a little round pom-pom. It's wonderful. So that is my herb of the week there.
Love it.
Selena?
Yep.
Just wanted to share.
Chop them up, put them on your eggs and... soaps and anything.
Oh, yeah, and the flower is also a great source of nectar for your pollinators.
Okay.
As recommended by the Royal Horticultural Society. So apparently they say top 10. Surveys show top 10 for nectar production. The old chive flower.
Great.
Who would have thought?
Stuff.
Herb of the week.
Thanks,
Karen.
Go
the chive.
Yay.
Yay.
Now that's all that we have time for. I'm glad to find all about that, Karen.
Oh, lovely. No worries, Selena.
And I hope your listeners have found that helpful. Please email us at gardenplanetfm@gmail.com if you'd like to ask us anything about gardening, and we'll answer yous next week. Happy
awesome.
Gardening, everyone.
See you later, everyone. Thanks for tuning in.